to take a moment to tell you about something really exciting for high school sports fans across the country. SB Live Sports has launched a free iPhone and Android app featuring the latest high school sports news here in Washington and across the country. With the SB Live Sports app, it's now even easier to follow your favorite team and tailor your experience to your interests. With real-time scores and news alerts, as well as video highlights, podcasts, photo galleries, rankings, game coverage, and much more, the app delivers on the content you want in one convenient place. The SB Live Sports app features exclusive content from on-the-ground reporters across the country, and it's the number one source for Washington high school sports fans, with coverage from reporters Todd Millis, myself, Andy Bueller, as well as SB Live's preeminent basketball mind and recruiting expert Dan Dickow. The SB Live Sports app is available at no charge in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Download it today. Welcome to the SB Live Washington podcast, weekly conversation about high school sports across the Evergreen State. I'm Andy Bueller, reporter with SB Live, and I'll be joined by WIAA Executive Director Mick Hoffman in a moment to dive into the COVID sports year in review and forecast what this upcoming 2021-2022 high school sports year in Washington will look like. No Dan Dickow today, but if you want to hear him, you can find him on the ISO podcast. Wherever you get podcasts, he's bringing heat 2 days a week. He had Baylor coach Scott Drew, a reigning national champ, on recently, and some great minds and perspectives on the national grassroots basketball scene. With me today, the prodigal son of Tacoma, Todd Millis. Todd, it's been a couple weeks since we've done this. How you doing?
Yeah, Andy, I think I can speak in behalf of both of us. I think we've been busy, man. It's been a long stretch trying to recap and wrap up some of our vast coverage of 3 seasons in 6 months, and getting out our all-state basketball teams, our final rankings, our senior state athletes of the year. It's been a lot of fun kind of wrapping things up and kind of having a chance to kind of look back at some of the highlights from football, basketball, and other sports that we got to cover this year. COVID was a crazy year, but there were a lot of really good things once I had a chance to kind of look back at it, and a lot of really good, cool things individually and team-wise that happened in the spring. And I'm looking forward to maybe a more normalized version of that coming up here in a couple months.
No question. Yeah, there was a long stretch of the pandemic that seemed like it went on for 10 years, where, you know, most of the news that we were reporting was coming from the WIAA and from the state powers that be. And I talked to Mick in this upcoming interview that we'll get to in a moment about this. But, you know, so often we were trying to answer the question over this past year of, can we play? Can we play? Will these high school seniors and these high schoolers get the chance to have this school year, or this athletic calendar, these 3 seasons in the confines of a pandemic? And now, you know, we're looking in review at a condensed 3-season schedule that was crazy, that was, a lot of sports were looped on top of one another. And, we're looking back on, in the rear view, and you're right. We did see so many great storylines, so many, unbelievable performances, and people really making the most of this season, and just so much proof through these athletes, just how much this season, and having this season and having high school sports as an outlet, how much it was missed and how much it was appreciated to be back. So to honor that, as you mentioned, we released our senior athletes of the year. Those are multi-sport athletes, on the best multi-sport athlete in each classification, both boy and girl. So there's 12 total athletes that we wrote profiles on. You can find those. I'll link them in the show notes, but those are on the site right now, as are the All-State boys and girls basketball teams, the final boys and girls basketball class by class rankings, and a lot to look forward to this summer, Todd. So our work can be found at scorebooklive.com and the SB Live Sports app. Download that app for free wherever you get apps. It's great. It's where you can find the work of you and I. If you like listening to us on the podcast and care about the things we're talking about, that's where you're going to find it. But Todd, what are you working on right now? Before we jump to Mick, what's coming up on the horizon that you're excited to point readers toward?
Well, I think it's what we are going to be working on, Andy, and it's about that time where we start looking at football and our preseason top 100 list. I know you and I are going to jump into some discussions about that. We've got a lot of underclassmen, juniors, sophomores, and ninth graders that were on our all-state teams that I would suspect would be on our preseason top 100. But it's going to be nice to kind of debate and look over some of the newer faces, some of the guys that maybe made some names for themselves in the springtime, moving forward as we get closer to the fall. So I, you know, getting that top 100 list, I know our listeners, our readers really like that particular list. And that's definitely something we'll be working on here over the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, of course, upcoming this weekend, we've got the MLB draft. I'll have tons of stuff on the site by the time you listen to this on that. There's some, one in particular high school player at this in this state, Malachi Knight of Marysville Getchell, who expects to hear his name called fairly early. Then you have a ton of great high school baseball players who are committed to great colleges who could hear their names called, and it'll be very interesting to track. So we've got lots coming up. Stay tuned with us on social media at SB Live WA or any of our other states if those are more relevant to you. Or to us here in this podcast feed, of course, subscribe where you can or where you get podcasts. Leave a review when you can. Tell us what you like, what you don't like, and just give Todd a compliment. Just pay him a nice compliment. Shout out his dog, Conan, and our official mascot of the podcast, and we'll be all set. So without further ado, Todd, it's been a pleasure. We're going to jump to this interview with Mick Hoffman, Executive Director of the WIAA. Welcome back to the podcast. WIAA Executive Director Mick Hoffman is with me. Mick, you came on the podcast last, believe it or not, 1 year ago, almost to the date. The WIAA had just announced the delay of the start of the high school sports season. Not the postponement, just the delay. I must say, Mick, it's nice to talk to you on the tail end of a 2021 sports calendar that's done, even though for a while it looked like it might not happen. And you know, country's in a much different place with this virus. So welcome back.
Thanks. It's nice to be here, kind of starting to look over the hill to the other side. So yeah, it seems like a lot longer than 12 months ago, I'll tell you that.
No kidding. You know, so much of the last year from your perspective has been just kind of taking what state powers that be, the governor's office, DOH, decides and kind of relaying that to schools. And I have to imagine, I know there's still some of that, but it's got to be a breath of fresh air going from kind of asking, can we play, and getting, you know, trying to get the answer to that question, to now getting into some of the minutiae, like, you know, championship events and such.
Yeah, it's a relief to be doing some of our regular work again. You know, for a while, I mean, we didn't know if we were going to make it, right? Let alone if kids were going to play, like, what's this going to look like in Washington at this point? So, yeah, it's, you know, now we're sorting through, making sure the guidelines are aligned throughout the state, so our schools have clear directions from the governor's office and Department of Health on masking. That's the one question yet to be answered. So,
yeah, let's get into that if you don't mind. What is the latest right now on masking? And you know, now that the state has lifted many of its COVID guidelines, that June 30th date was obviously big. The state's reopened. Does this make you optimistic about the fall? And just can we say that it's back to business, back to normal yet?
You know, I don't think we could safely say back to normal, because right now what we're struggling with is there's still the recommendation from the Department of Health for K-12 guidelines. So basically in-person learning, that they recommend masks for employees and students of all ages, despite the vaccine, you know, down to 12-year-olds. And the complication with that is, you know, normally a recommendation is great. Local control, do what you think is best for your kids and your staff. Great. The issue with it is we have two major risk management groups that represent all those schools in our state. And especially one of them, their attorneys are saying to date that a recommendation is essentially a have to. And so if those guidelines don't change from a recommendation, then I'm not sure how those attorneys are going to interpret that, which will push that onto our schools. And our schools aren't going to go against a directive from the attorneys of the risk management. So it's a liability, kind of a CYA at the district level, which we understand. So to try to resolve this, we've already called a meeting at the end of July with all players, both risk management groups, their attorneys, Department of Health, Governor's Office, Superintendent's Group. Everybody just wants clarity and is this really necessary? Washington has been very successful as far as the numbers. Any death is one too many, but you look around the country, it was really low. But you also look around since these other states reopened, and they've been on a similar decline as us. And so we're hoping we get to the point at a minimum that if people are vaccinated, they have the option. Incentivize it. If they're saying it's safe, if they're saying it's what they want, they be in the governor's office and Department of Health, and let's incentivize it and find that middle ground, because it appears to be working everywhere else in the country.
So right now is the question then, will these sport guidelines continue to be tied to the in-person learning and kind of looped under the same umbrella?
Yeah, that's a question we're asking that we haven't gotten an answer for. They told us it'd be resolved with this June 30th, but it wasn't. Up until now, we were told the sports guidelines are separate from K-12. So that's why we were under different guidelines than what they were in schools, essentially, even though we're education-based activities. They being the governor's office is still saying that. The issue is with the way the attorneys are interpreting it. And so we need them to clarify for all of us, most importantly, their superintendents and school boards that they're working for, what exactly does that mean? And so I'm guessing they're sitting back waiting. They're being prudent. They're watching to see what happens with this Delta variant and everything else as we come out of full-fledged masking. And so we're hoping that we at least go to what the sporting guidelines became June 2nd, which was the option. Even better is we're past this and they don't need them, except for maybe on the bench or locker rooms and taking some, prudent precautions. But during play, whether it's indoors or outdoors, outdoors right now, we could play without masks anyway. So it's really going to be the indoor sports, specifically in the fall. It's going to be volleyball for the most part, how that's treated. And then we'll see where we're at come winter.
So July 28th is the date to look out for. That's when it sounds like that meeting takes place. And there will be some more clarity there at the end of the month as those fall sports start to prepare to kick into gear. But from a season schedule standpoint, from a state playoff standpoint, will this fall and will this 2021-22 sports calendar year look like a full-fledged return to normal?
That's our plan. We're going out right now and securing contracts with all our large venues that we've typically played in, the domes and that for wrestling and basketball and volleyball. And what we've been told is even under today's conditions, all the guidelines that were pre-June 30th, we would expect to have full crowds, full capacity. The question is going to come down whether people have to mask or not in the stands. And, we're at the point where we're hoping we don't have to because, again, we're not seeing a need for it right now like we were before. Right now, hopefully we're going to have, fill in the Sun Dome in Yakima with a bunch of volleyball players and St. Martin's. And, we packed those high school stadiums again for football. It seems like forever since we went through that big controversy and, the fallout was kids loved it to the point that our boys basketball coach association, WIPCA, we were meeting, discussing new tournament formats. And they said, hey, after what we saw with those football environments, with packed stadiums and loud, heck, that might be the way to go. If we can find large enough high schools or colleges, small colleges that can host or will host, great environment for high school sport. So that's what we're hoping to, I mean, we're right now totally geared up for back to normal.
So for football, you mentioned the kind of repeat of what the 2019 state football championships were, which were in three outdoor high school district venues that were all in the Tacoma area. Have you secured lease agreements for those or rental agreements for those same three stadiums? Has that yet to be determined?
Yeah, Andy Barnes had conversations with all of them. They're all interested in hosting again. It was a good experience for all of them. I know a lot of them, like in Tacoma School District, you know, that's really one of the reasons they built that stadium was to be a community asset. So talking with Johnny Lee, who's our on-site manager, they're really hopeful to do it. So all three have said they want to host again. They did a great job with it. And Andy's also looking at alternative sites in case we get two East Side schools that play and it makes sense to move that game. We're good to go for the fall, and we've got most of our winter contracts actually signed for next year. And then during the course of the fall, we'll be finishing our evaluation we had going pre-pandemic of all the tournament formats and locations and seeing what we want to do moving forward. So a lot of exciting and fun work to do rather than, you know, get out of survival mode.
Yeah, no question. You talk about the feedback you received from WIBCA with basketball in those state tournaments, which have taken place at, three dome arenas across the state. How much headway do you see there being with that, especially with 3A, 4A in the Tacoma Dome? And then let's take a look at Matt Classic as well, because, the Tacoma Dome you guys moved away from for football. Is there a sense, based on the feedback you're getting from, either the WIBCAs, the coaches associations, or elsewhere, or your own personal view, that there might be, potential to go smaller?
Yeah, so for wrestling, for example, just based on the cost of the event, we're almost at the point of losing money on that event, which that event has been a revenue generator. And if the, ideally the girls continue to grow their tournament, and then we actually are looking at adding an extra day, which makes it cost prohibitive. So, that's the cost of success. And the other piece we ran into with the Tacoma Dome is, they've done some really nice upgrades to the facility. It's, with the bleachers and all that. However, it's designed for concerts, not for sporting activities. And just like in football, where there are sightline issues, we have that in wrestling. So, the last thing we want to do is split that tournament. So we're looking at what options there are, but it is conceivable that could be split in some way, either by school size or gender or what have you, to where we would move into different venues. I know you're a Spokane guy from college, and so I don't know if you've seen the new facility they've built over there, but it's really nice. We're going to tour it in August. We got a virtual tour a few months ago. So there's some options out there that we think would be a great setting. So that's one. Justin's working with the Coach Association on that one. And then basketball, we were pretty deep in that process pre-pandemic, and there was a concept that was starting to kind of cement itself with this Final Four idea. And the whole idea is to continue to have those the Final Four in big venues. Because one, we're hoping to bring a lot of people. If we had, think about this, three classifications in one site, and two courts, and six semifinals on one court for one gender and six on the other court. So you go to basketball game on Friday, you can watch 12 semifinals if you're sitting in the middle, or six if it's single gyms, depending on what we end up with a format or a location. And then that many, six championship games on Saturday. I mean, that's, as a basketball fan, that's pretty cool. And then playing up to that is where we could get into some of these larger, we'd have basically 2 weeks of regionals potentially in the larger high schools or small colleges. And so that plan was really coming to a final review pre-pandemic with a lot of support from a variety of people. And so we need to dust it off, take it back out to all of them. They've had a year and a half, almost 2 years to think about it. And in the interim this year, we'll go through what we've always known for our state tournaments the last 6-7 years at least. And we'll see where we end up. Maybe it changes, maybe it doesn't. That'll be the will of the board at that point. But with input, we want to make sure people we solicit feedback. And, you know, ideally in the 3A, 4A, 80% of our schools or student population, I should say, comes from the west side, Puget Sound area. So moving out of that region makes it difficult. But there are other venues available besides the Tacoma Dome that could possibly host boys and girls with Climate Pledge coming on. Show wear is a nice facility. I mean, if you had one basketball court in there, you go up north to Everett, there's a couple options up there. So there's some opportunity for that. And Yakima, I will tell you as a community, I don't know if you've ever met Rich Austin over there, but that guy gets things done. And that community is so welcoming and does so many extra things for the kids. Everything from the host families that take care of them to spaghetti feeds at the events. It's like the old school event and not just renting a place as a, you know, almost like a hotel where you're in and out. Like they really value hosting state events there. And so he's working on a variety of ideas and opportunities in that part of the state, as is Spokane and Tri-City. So we're gonna have some really good options on the east side.
That, of course, as you said, is for not this upcoming school year, but for the following school year. But you know, that intrigues me, what you brought up about state basketball being at two venues and throwing three classifications at each. Logistically and just from a scheduling standpoint, have you found that to be in your research? Would that be feasible?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it does a couple things. One, our rentals are cut in half, essentially. And we believe, I mean, our biggest night is semifinal. Right. Sometimes going into a final game, you know, it's better with the seeding committees, but a lot of times the championship game was, you know, the second or third round of state, not the final game. And we're hoping with seeding committees and the semifinals that we'll actually have capacity issues at a Spokane Arena or a Sun Dome, or have the Tacoma Dome, similar to when we had Michael Porter Jr. playing. You know, you have, because if we can draw back the non-school basketball fan, the general basketball fan, because of the what we're presenting in that format. So that's why that has become so exciting. You know, basketball people internally are thinking, wow, this would be really cool. It's just, how do we get there? How do we get to that day? So yeah, I mean, right now we host 8 games a day. So we'd be hosting 6 on each court. So we could start a little later, end a little earlier, hopefully not finish at midnight. You know, I'm getting old, man. I need my sleep. So but we wouldn't have to have an 8 a.m. basketball game. You know, we could have a 10 a.m., which some people may not want to play a semifinal, but heck, you're playing a semifinal and hopefully you're going to have that place full, as you're playing. So, yeah, we think it can definitely work. We've worked up some mock schedules with the committee that was working on it, which is a combination of coaches and ADs, from around the state. So like I said, Andy Barnes is, so dusting that off, they're going to get back to work here in August.
You talk about the added value for a general basketball fan, somebody that's not specifically tied to one school or another. And this question, you know, is something that I've looked into a little bit in other states. Some states like California have an open division playoff where there's a bracket and the top teams of the state, regardless of classification, are seeded into one open tournament. And I got to say, you know, covering high school sports from a statewide standpoint, the prospect of seeing, you know, a Graham Kapowsin football take on an O'Day, or, you know, a Union basketball playing a Seattle Prep, or even, you know, we just finished this 1A tournament, this kind of non-sanctioned, quote-unquote, state invitational. Seeing that 1A boys basketball, and even, you know, on the girls' side too, seeing them go against the bigger schools, it's intriguing from a fan standpoint. What do you think about the idea of an open division playoff?
Yeah, you know, the biggest challenge we would have is schools wanting to play in it. So, you know, like in California, at one point they had 16 teams in that tournament. Well, 9 through 16 weren't too excited about playing in it because they're going up against the top 8 in the state of California. They'd rather play in their classification level to have a chance at winning a trophy. So if, you know, if we, you know, I don't know how many teams we could put into something like that that would want to play. You know, actually what we have talked about doing, and again, this was just very preliminary conversations early that fall and winter when I first started up there, but is that you have a tournament of champions afterwards, right? So you'd go 1 week deeper into the next season, but you're only talking about the teams that won it. So now all of a sudden, if Royal Football, right, could play Union, if it makes sense in a matchup, right, that you're not going to have. So, you know, you do the same thing in basketball. Or think about this in wrestling. You take your six classification winners and you put them, you know, men and women, into a six-person bracket and wrestle it off on a day. And so we've talked about doing that potentially down the road as a way to, one, generate interest from around the state. And number two is then you could make potentially determine a true state champion. We really have found that we think we do it in every sport, would have the opportunity to do that. So we do it in music right now, right? We don't do classifications. So we're very set in these classification structures for a reason in athletics. But we also know that sometimes those small schools are pretty dang good. And instead of just a heated debate over a soda, we could find out really if that 2B school could beat that 4A school, if the schools are interested in doing it. So that's something that once we get this tournament format review and locations done, that we'll start spending our time on something like that, and see if there's interest from the schools to pursue it. So kind of a different way of going around the open one. You know, I sat in a meeting and California was sharing their classification structure. And one of the working ADs in the crowd raised his hand and he said, essentially we created the open division because we know these schools all cheat and recruit and duh, duh, duh. And even if they don't, we can never beat them anyways. So rather than having, you know, knowing who's going to win the state championship prior to the year, they just get to go play each other. And he says, you go watch those. It doesn't matter what the sport, it's awesome, he said. And he said, and then the rest of us get to compete against teams that we got a chance against. So it makes sense. I don't know if we have that much disparity in Washington, but it sure would be fun to watch O'Day football play a Royal football in a contest after the season to see who is that state champion. And with our seeding committees, we could determine an overall number one and number two to play it off. So to be determined.
Yeah, so a bracket of champions after the normal classification playoff. I'm intrigued. I've got to say, let's revisit this down the road.
Yeah, you know, we talk about declining attendance, and you know, what are people interested in? What are people watching? You know, why is the clubs? You know, we're different than clubs. We should be able to coexist with clubs, but there's things we could offer through education-based activities that will also keep that fan connected to us, and so. You know, that's one way to highlight your elite track kid. I mean, imagine you run the 100 meters and then you take the six girls who won it the day before and you run them the next day, right? Or you bring them together the next week. I got to believe people would want to watch that, to go to a track meet and watch the six champions compete in every track and field event. So, and it should be fun from our perspective. I mean, it's an extra week work, but wow. What a great thing to call work. So yeah, so that's it's definitely out there. We'll see if we can get traction with our schools. It involves extra costs of travel in some cases, and it goes a week into their next season. But it may pique enough interest that we can pull that off. And again, you're only talking the champions. You're not talking a large field. So.
You bring up club sports. Over the last year, when high school sports in Washington were shut down, with student athletes looking for opportunities. The opportunities sometimes were only being presented at the club level, whether it was, you know, through AAU basketball, you know, teams going to tournaments out of state, or in football. We saw, you know, football and all these sports have become year-round sports if you so choose, and if you want to spend the money. But we saw, you know, some things, you know, that happened that hadn't happened before, like, you know, during a winter, you had players going and playing in, you know, different leagues, club basketball leagues out of state. We saw The two training outfits, FSP and Air, put on a club football padded scrimmage a couple months ago. How did you view club sports in the context of this past year and just how the WIA views club sports? You say, you know, hey, we want to work with and kind of around these club sports. The schedules are pretty clearly defined of, you know, club sports have X amount of time and high school sports have X amount of time. How did you view, you know, club sports over this past year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one, thankfully there was a place for kids to go play, right? Because we found out how incredibly important that is for in a variety of ways. I mean, what we saw with, you know, mental health issues, successful suicide attempts, I mean, it was horrific. And so, so thankfully there was an outlet. You know, the one thing about club sports is it's one of the largest unregulated industries in the country. I just sat in on a presentation about it, and the context of the presentation was, how do we coexist? Because we should be able to coexist, right? And so after listening to this, it makes sense. My only concern with it is there's so many promises made to kids and families, and there's no accountability other than, you know, they go out of business. They file Chapter 11, right? Boom, gone. And if they would start telling kids, not only do you have to pay thousands of dollars a year to be a member of the ARC deal, but you also need to pay for this $100 an hour, you know, individualized lessons for our coaches. You know, I would hope that parents would step back and take a look at that and try to decide what are they getting for their money? Because number one is, it's not equitable. They're not letting every kid into that like we do, right? And if kids who maybe don't have the finances, they're taking care of the elite, which we need to take care of our elite athletes, right? There needs to be a venue for them. And that's where I think the club sports really can help serve that need. Because in education base, we're taking care of all of them, right? I mean, we got legislation that says we can't, or we have to reduce what we charge for play to pay fees in schools, yet find a way to finance it. And so, and then you have this, you know, $77 billion a year business, able to operate differently. So I don't really see them as competition for us, in any way, shape or form. I'm hoping that it doesn't ruin the experience for kids, in that it becomes so, you know, parents feel like, because they either didn't have that opportunity to play as much when they are a kid, or they're so afraid their kids are going to miss out nowadays, right? I mean, and we're in this instant gratification. I need to get on my phone and check everything right now, and I need it right now. And that it doesn't hurt kids in the long run, that they stay with it and at least play through high school. Because the fact of the matter is 4% are going to college to play, right? 4% of high school athletes go play. And I'm watching Vanderbilt baseball the other day in the College World Series, and what do they get? They have 25 or 28 kids on the roster, and I think they get like 11 and a half scholarships, and three of those are going to their first three pitchers. So you have 8.5 scholarships for 22 guys, and how many tens of thousands of dollars did parents pay for lessons and everything for the kids that do make the team? And then how many parents spent that same amount for their kids that aren't even playing through high school? So I think that's my concern with it, is that it's such a big business at 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old level that we lose kids by the time they're in middle school, let alone high school, and they don't get the full benefit of what education-based is, right? And at the same time, they're taking care of elite kids. They're getting to play around the country. The ones that are the ones who are going to get those scholarships are getting a chance to play. The other piece is that is concerning with some of the things that we saw is what kind of training and liability protection do these clubs have? So I know in my experience with schools, when the booster club would want to run a camp in the summer for the coach, right? They're going to run it as the basketball program. And they're required to have insurance. Well, they find an insurance policy for $300, $400, $500. But what we learned very quickly was if they need to utilize that insurance form, they usually didn't even get a response. So now if all of a sudden somebody gets hurt at your event, and you're the person in charge, you might become personally liable. And if you don't have any extra protection and your insurance company's out of business because it's a non-US based company, and it, you know, the people are jumping from name to name in their company. Now all of a sudden you get a kid with a serious injury and there's nothing there to help the family take care of that injury, let alone protect the individuals who may be acting in the best of faith to provide opportunity for kids. So it's a lot more complicated than you're stealing our best athletes or not letting kids play. I don't think we have a lot of that, right? There's a lot of specialization. I think we're one generation away from the next set of parents realizing playing year round 5 days a week in one sport is not necessarily the best thing. And the amount of money my parents spent on me, and I ended up going D3 and paying my way anyway, or I went to D1 and I didn't realize I had 40 hours a week of conditioning. This is more work than I want to do. I think we'll have that generation of kids that have gone through it and we'll see it a little differently. I heard Matt Holliday get inducted in the NFHS Hall of Fame last week. And he said his biggest regret was his senior year not playing basketball because he thought he had to get ready for the MLB draft. And he said to this day, despite a hugely successful career, what he misses the most was not playing with his buddies that senior year and how much fun that would have been and what he missed out on. And so, so I think we're going to have a lot of parents that aren't as successful athletically as Matt Holliday, but have gone through the experience and see, you know what, I can't buy my way to D1. There's still something about genetics. There's still something about limited opportunity. And I just need to enjoy the experience and get out of it. And so I think that's where we'll get into a better balance with club sports. And, you know, heck, maybe teams can move into their program down the road after a season and do some of these, you know, specialized tournaments that we can't run because we're tied to schools. So I think there's a lot to be done. And in the short term, I'm just hoping people don't get stuck because they're not, you know, taking care of the legal or insurance issues that schools are so conscientious of.
Well, you just went through a ton of layers of, you know, obviously a complicated issue. But, you know, you bring up Matt Holliday, and I can think of an example just like him in Washington. And that's Malachi Knight, Marysville Getchell. Baseball and basketball standout who in a couple days as we record this here is likely to hear his name called in the MLB draft on the potentially the first day. And he made it a point after that long shutdown, spent 6 weeks in Arizona in the winter to get opportunities to play when there weren't any in the high school level. And once his high school came back, he said, I'm playing baseball and I'm playing basketball. And he just wrapped up his basketball season a couple weeks ago. He was on our all-state team, and so there's plenty of examples like that, as you said, Mick. So I want to rewind to November of last year. High school sports were in limbo, delays were ever present, and the goalposts of having seasons and those start dates kept changing. For coaches, players, obviously very straining to navigate. You took in November, your sharpest stance in the pandemic, in a conversation with me, you said that state officials should take a really hard look at loosening restrictions because of the impact on kids. At that point, Washington was one of, I think, 13 states where high school sports were sidelined. And you decided, and the WIA decided, that it needed to play the role of vocal advocate. Walk me through that decision. Did you feel like it... That was something that just happened naturally? Did you feel like there was really a big change in tone from you guys? Or was that just you vocalizing something that the association had long believed?
Yeah, you know, up to that point in our conversations with the governor's office, especially the Department of Health, they weren't factoring in the social, emotional, mental health. And, you know, as school people working with kids, I mean, it's more than just play. And when we were hearing about some of the, there's starting to come out enough evidence, right? And everything was moving so slowly. So even though we were seeing a huge spike, you know, I decided we need to do this. I mean, I didn't even tell our board, honestly, beforehand. I said, coming into this job, you know, I'm not the smartest guy, but surround myself with smart people, and we have a great staff and we have a great board. And just in our conversations, we were all in agreement that this was going on. And it was going to take a long time to move the Department of Health from their sole focus on the physical health to the social emotional. And so we decided we needed to shake it up. And so, you know, we have a really good staff. And so I put thoughts to paper, and they, my comment is they make it sing, right? They're like you, they're writers, and, you know, they can make sense out of those thoughts that you have. And yeah, so we decided that we needed, for the sake of our kids, what we're seeing with our kids, that had to be factored in. And if we waited until we were on a decline, by the time it happened, it's going to be too late. And so, yeah, so we decided to take the chance. I mean, coming in, I said, I'm keeping my teaching and my admin certificate current in case I get fired, so I can, I'll go be a playground monitor somewhere. So somebody could use me somewhere, I suppose. So, yeah, it just, you know, you get opportunities to work in a job like this, and you have to step up at different times. And fortunately, we have a great board and a great staff, and so you don't have to stand out there by yourself. But yeah, it was a very conscious and deliberate strategy to raise that level of concern. And it seemed to help. And more people started coming forward with it after that. So that was, you know, I think there's a lot of people were at that point. Somebody just needed to push it. And, you know, not being directly in schools, we have a little more leeway. So we decided to be the one to make the push.
Well, the impact of, you know, that tone from you, your op-ed, potentially the student athletes of Washington, that group that that gathered and advocated for their own seasons at the state capitol in September, a couple months before your op-ed. Did you get the sense that there was anything that came from either you or from the grassroots level that did make an impact, that did move the needle in your conversations with the DOH and the governor's office?
Yeah, you know, I don't think initially they were really aware of how big and impactful the sports community is, especially at the youth level. You know, they're paying attention to the professional sports because they bring in billions of dollars essentially to the economy. But they didn't necessarily have a strong, they didn't have the experience of working with community and youth sports. And so when they saw the passion in that SAW group and how organized, and then they started working with us and saw how organized and how we could mobilize, I think it got their attention. And to their credit, they listened and they learned. And they by January, they set up regular meetings with us so we could have, you know, every Friday up until mid-June, we had a regular meeting with the Department of Health and governor's office, the people making the recommendations and policy, to plead our case essentially and to dialogue about, so we could understand what they were dealing with and they could understand where we're at, so we could try to push as hard as we could. So yeah, so I think because of those events going back to October, November with SAW and then us, it forced action, and the action became a partnership rather than a fight. And that's really a credit. You know, they could have gotten really defensive at that point. Honestly, at one point I thought they did, because all of a sudden they weren't answering emails, but they were buried in some other work. And so when I reached out and you know, basically just said, hey, I haven't heard from you in a couple of weeks. Like, these are things we've been talking about. There's nothing new. They said, no, not at all. They weren't offended or bothered by it. It just raised a different level of awareness. So, you know, that's a lot of credit, especially to the, you know, John Snyder in the governor's office has been an awesome ally as we've worked through this. He's really worked hard to understand the team-based sports and the high school experience. So,
this pandemic's economic impact is obviously widespread. How did it impact the WIA from a financial standpoint? The year of no state championships.
You know, initially we were looking at a significant loss, and you know, about 60% of our revenues comes from tournaments, and but also with that, about 50 some percent of our expenses come from the tournaments, and by not running them, it pretty much negated it. And then we applied for grants all over the place. Leah Francis is our CFO. She did amazing work seeking those out and getting them. And so we actually ended up coming out to where we're okay. Like, we're going to be fine. You know, we're not going to have to cut anybody. We were able to stay whole as a staff. We only have 12 as it is. So there's more than enough work to do anyway. And we're not going to have to cut any programming. So we ended up financially being fine. We got a there was a tax break grant that we got right at the end. You know, we're negotiating with, we have a bunch of sponsors. So our sponsors were really good to us and understanding. We were very creative in trying to find ways to, since we weren't hosting state tournaments, for example, this, we partnered with the Seahawks and did the game of the week. And so we did a football game every week and a volleyball soccer match every week. Paul Beattie with ESN put those out on the streaming for us on the NFHS network at no cost. And so the NFHS network let us access that. So we were able to give our sponsors quite a bit of exposure that way to mitigate that. Andy Knapp was very creative in marketing with Casey, coming up with different things on our app. So, you know, WI Live, we were doing all kinds of things. We did the mascot challenge and what have you. And so we were able to keep a lot of engagement despite not having tournaments. So by cutting expenses, even with reduced revenues and some grants, we were able to stay whole essentially for the year. So,
well, that's good to hear.
I'll tell you, until April, I mean, I couldn't sleep because, you know, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, not only are we going to all take huge pay cuts, but we're going to have to release staff. I mean, our staff, they worked their asses off for a year and a half. I mean, right now, basically had to mandate they take as much vacation as they can in July, because when we come back in August, we're busy. They've been able to use their vacation a year and a half, where a lot of schools were sitting idle. We were jamming. I mean, last summer, it was 6-7 days a week just trying to figure out what was going on, what we could do, and then prepare, and then boom, tear it up and start over as soon as the next rule came out. So we were very, very fortunate to be able to find some alternative funding that bring, I mean, we're looking at $1.7 million deficit. Our budget's only $4.7 million. I mean, that's, we're looking at having to sell our building and find new space. I mean, we were scrambling early on. So, it ended up working out.
And you could safely say you guys are in the clear.
Yeah. I mean, right now, assuming we go into, you know, and our vendors, like these big contracts we had with the domes and that, they were good about letting us out. We communicated with them the whole time. So they didn't stick us with any cancellation fees or anything like that. So, you know, that's why we want to try to keep them in the mix moving forward, as they were good partners to us and we appreciate that. So, yeah.
I want to finish on two questions on two completely different topics. We can run through these. I know you've been very generous with your time today, and I appreciate that. As of July 1, college athletics changed. We now have name, image, likeness, NIL as it's referred to. NIL allows college athletes to be able to profit off of their own name, image, likeness. And I'm wondering if there's going to be a trickle down to the high school level, and are there any rules in place stopping high school kids, particularly high profile high school athletes, from doing the same, from running a camp in the summer or taking advantage of this? Will this, in your view, have any trickle down impact on high school sports?
I think eventually we'll probably see more and more push down. You know, high school is so different than college. I mean, we're up until that point considered amateur, but again, they're working with the elite amateurs, which are essentially pros, and they got coaches making millions and we have coaches losing money. And so I think it's a very different environment, but right now a kid can go shoot a commercial. We don't, you know, they can't get a certain amount of gifts at an event, like a golfer or a swimmer or baseball or whatever. So they can't get paid like an appearance fee. But the kid can go do a commercial. They just can't use their school uniform, right? So they'd have to go out there as an individual. And, yeah, they could profit from that. So there's already a way more flexibility in our rules than what the NCAA had. And I think that was a mistake the NCAA made, is they were too stringent and too slow to act. And so we don't really see this as a significant issue for us moving forward.
All right, next question. Last question. Esports. WI just announced a partnership with CSL Esports. It's a college esports league. You know, esports is relatively new, I should say, but you know, big business, booming, particularly at the college, the pro level. I'm curious, what is the state of high school esports in Washington, and what opportunity do you see here?
I was on a call this morning where we're rolling out the initial plan. So we're getting information out to our schools this summer. We just put something out for a workshop that schools could attend to just kind of learn, hey, what is esports? How do we set up our teams? We already have over 50 schools that signed up just on a single email blast. So there's a lot of interest. We're going to start signing schools up right after Labor Day. We'll do a modified season in the fall to be determined what games we play. It looks like maybe Rocket League. There's a financial literacy game that's possible as well for the supplement. We really want to make it more than just gaming. And then we're hoping that we'll have some partners. There's some really good Washington State resources regarding what CTE, kind of the old voc ed. So it's more than just gaming. Like, how do you put on this production and all the technology that's involved in the marketing? And so we really see this as kind of the old DECA on steroids with gaming. And so, yeah, we're really excited. So we'll get it up and running in the fall. We'll have that inaugural season, and then there'll be a spring season as well. And then as far as, you know, what do we do for culminating events? It's going to depend on how many schools take part first. You know, schools are going to be pretty overwhelmed coming back to in-person learning, depending what rules are on. So we know it'll be a little bit of a slow go in the fall, but we want to get it out there. We fully anticipate, you know, bringing in a different kid. We'll have a lot of repeat athletes participating, but it'll also hopefully go to a segment of our school populations that aren't involved in any WI activities already, which will be exciting for us. And we'll run with it. So, yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. CSL, we did a ton of research. Justin Kesterson led that for us. And it's the first state platform, but they have a really good, vibrant platform to be able to put this so we don't have to worry about the technology issues. And so, you know, we're looking at make sure we have connectivity everywhere. It doesn't matter the most rural school or the most urban school, and not have any barriers to kids participating.
Esports at the high school level. Looking forward to see how that all plays out. Mick, I really appreciate your time and openness here. I hope it doesn't take another global pandemic to bring us back.
Please, no. I'm going to disappear if that happens. I can't do this again. So, no, I appreciate your time, Andy. And hey, you know, we got a partnership, Bruin. I don't know if you heard.
Sure did.
Yeah, for on the data sharing. So we're excited to get that going as well. So
appreciate your time, Mick. Always a pleasure.
All right. Take care.
You too. Podcast is brought to you by SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, your national hub for high school sports news and information. Subscribe for free wherever you get podcasts. If you do it on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and review to help us best serve you, the listener. You can find our website at scorebooklive.com/Washington. There you'll see news, features, highlights, podcasts, and everything in the world of high school sports across this state. As always, a big shout out to our sponsor, Washington Federal. Thanks to Dan Dickow and Todd Millis for bringing the heat every week. This song you're hearing is by the band Woodrow. It's called So Far Away. It's written by James Schroeder, Carl Johnson, and my dad, Matt Bueller. I'm Andy Bueller. We'll be back next week.